Hello there, and welcome once more to Innovators in Care. I'm your host, Reuben Bush, and this is the show where we sit down with thought leaders in health and social care to talk about the problems they're solving and how they're innovating to reduce system-wide pressure and improve patient outcomes. In our last episode, we sat down with Andy Collin to talk about falls, the ambulance service, and risk appetite. Now today, we move on to primary care. We're sitting down with Jamie Frayne, paramedic ambassador for the Chelmsford West PCN. Jamie has been in the NHS for 25 years, starting out as a porter and working his way up through the ambulance service into primary care. In this episode, we dive into what Jamie has learned in his time in the NHS and talk about the Falls project that he's working on to get PCNs responding to falls in the community. So, hello Jamie, welcome to Innovators in Care.
Thank you, good morning, how are you?
Yes, good, and you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Very good, very good. I think it'd be good to start, Jamie, with you, if you could tell us a bit about who you are, your role and what you do.
Yeah, of course. So my name's Jamie. I'm a paramedic. I've been in the NHS for about 25 years, approximately, starting at the very beginning as a porter. And then I worked some time in theatres as a operating department practitioner. And that saw me mostly working at the Royal London Trauma Centre on the anaesthetic side. And the main role I did there was whenever the helicopter emergency medical service would bring in a patient or the ambulance service would bring in a major trauma patient, I would go downstairs with the anaesthetist and stabilise that patient, either for going on to surgery or into intensive care. So I did that for about 7 or 8 years, and over the time really worked alongside the ambulance service a lot and thought, I won't mind a bit of that. So I became a paramedic after doing a 3-year degree. And most of that time was with the London Ambulance Service. And I did a few different roles, from working on a regular frontline ambulance to working in the control room, which was basically providing advice to either other ambulance clinicians or to members of the public who'd phone 999. Other roles that I'd done were either on a fast response car. That would be going to the higher acuity 999 calls, whether it's cardiac arrests, fittings, trauma patients. And then I found myself working on a bicycle. So I worked on a bicycle for 10 years in and around East London, mostly in Stratford. So we would cover the Olympic Park, we'd cover the Westfield Shopping Centre and the residential area around there. And we would respond to any category of call, whether it be C1, which is our sickest patients, down to a C4, which would be a non-injury type patient. So yeah, so I did that for 10 years, working on a bicycle through all weathers. The bicycle weighed about 7 or 8 stone. So yeah, I was a lot fitter then, as you may imagine. And I left the ambulance service 2 years ago to come into primary care, which I think was a natural progression, because in the ambulance service, when I was on the bicycles, 80% of our patients that we dealt with, we left at home. So we would refer them on to other community providers. So I'm very used to dealing with patients in their own homes and finding an alternative way of treating them other than them going to the ED department. So I'm now in a very busy primary care network based in Chelmsford in Essex. We have approximately about 45,000 patients under our care, and that's across 5 different practices. So I provide a minor illness clinic in the morning. I see approximately about 10 to 12 patients in the morning, and then go out to any home visits in the afternoon. So yes, that's where I am at the moment. I also do 2 part-time roles during the week. One is a paramedic ambassador. So that's essentially working within the Mid and South Essex Training Hub. And the role is to help develop the paramedic role within primary care and make us a bit more effective and to help out with recruitment and retention. The other role that I do, which is a part-time role, is stewardship. So I belong to the Urgent and Emergency Care Stewardship Group, which is a group of individuals, whether they be senior clinicians or senior leaders. And we are presently looking at routes to ED, and more importantly, keeping people out of ED and making sure that they find better care rather than waiting for an ambulance or, you know, having to go to a very busy emergency department. So that's where I am at the moment.
Excellent. That's very interesting, Jamie. Having been in the NHS for 25 years, you must have seen a lot of change over that time.
Yeah, certainly. I think the biggest change I've seen is around emergency care. So when I joined in the ambulance service, so I've been a paramedic for about 14 years. We had time on station, you know, we had time to sit down and debrief jobs with each other, calls with each other. Now the ambulance service, they start at station, and the only time they see station is when they get back after a 12-hour shift, where they're generally off late. I'd say the biggest change that I've seen, and I think certain factors of the changes that I've seen have certainly been sped up due to COVID, are how we treat patients. We're not taking everyone to hospital. And I think that's the biggest innovation in healthcare at the moment, is we're looking at different routes of care for patients. And the patients are gratefully receiving it. In other words, lots of patients that I deal with, they don't want to go to hospital. And they can be treated in the comfort of their own home around their family. So protocols like that, I think, are really helping. And I think they're really helping taking off pressure off the other services.
Absolutely. That's good. That's good. So, Jamie, tell us a bit about Chelmsford West Primary Care Network, sort of what it is and what it does.
Yeah, sure. So Chelmsford West PCN is basically a service of five surgeries that have all come together as one primary care network. And under the primary care network, you'll have different clinicians that are almost shared amongst the PCN. So, for example, I'm one of the members of staff that are used across the board of the primary care network. So I deliver a service for all five surgeries. Within that primary care network, we also have pharmacists, we also have physiotherapists, and they all tend to work amongst all the five surgeries, seeing all the different patients from different areas of that region. So our area is just on the outskirts of Chelmsford city centre. I think we have approximately about 43,000 people under our care across the five surgeries. We have all different demographics, we have all different ages. I think I'm quite proud to say that the majority of our patients are seen face-to-face. That's been a big criticism over COVID within primary care. We tend to give them the opportunity to choose whether or not they'd like a telephone call or face-to-face. So, for example, I've been auditing the work that I've done over the last 5-6 months. And I think I'm up to 82% of my consultations are face-to-face. And the majority of the time that they're telephone calls is generally when someone's at work. So I think we have a lot of patient satisfaction from that side of things. Within the PCN, we obviously have we have GPs. We have GPs of different grades. We have medical students. We have nursing students. So we have a real mix of different skills and abilities, which I believe really helps that patient care and, you know, treatment, because they don't necessarily have to see a GP. GPs are quite a finite resource nowadays. Whereas, you know, a patient could come and see me at my minor illness clinic. I could assess them. We could get them whatever treatment prescribed. I could follow them up in a week's time. And it seems to work really well. For example, I've had several patients that have actually asked to see me over a doctor. So, you know, that's always a nod in the right direction that it's obviously working well. I work with another colleague who's also a paramedic that we've recently taken on, who's just left the ambulance service. It's a really enjoyable place to work. It's always very busy, and there's always something to learn, which is the main perk of the job for me, I think.
Yes, okay. So sort of the overall purpose is about bringing all those different skills together sort of into one place so the person can actually get what they need rather than having to do lots of different appointments and go and see lots of different people.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that I found through the audit that I've done on my own work is a lot of GPs that are thinking about taking on a paramedic, for example, they feel that they might have to overlook that paramedic every step of the way. Whereas the work that I've audited in the last 5 months shows that 97% of my patients don't need a secondary assessment by another clinician. So we're very autonomous, and paramedics are used to dealing with from birth to death. You know, we can deal with all members of society, and we're used to that. And I think one of our strengths as paramedics is we're very much used to working in someone's house. That's essentially our working environment. Some other clinicians that have been who've done most of their training in a hospital environment find it quite unnatural to then be put into a patient's house, and that's where they do their assessment. So for us, it's a natural thing. The only thing I'm not doing is turning up in a big yellow ambulance. So that's the main difference.
Yes, okay. That's good. That's really interesting. You mentioned COVID earlier. It'd be really interesting to understand what you learned in that time.
Yeah, sure. I think I speak for every healthcare professional. COVID was a very difficult time. I spent the first 2 years of COVID on an ambulance, on a frontline ambulance within London Ambulance Service. And I'd probably say my 25-year service in the NHS, it's probably the most difficult time. I was doing 2 or 3 cardiac arrests a day. Well, and, you know, the youngest I did was a 25-year-old who was fit and well. And, you know, weirdly, on the same day, I went to a 103-year-old with COVID. She had a runny nose and she said, "I don't know what all the fuss is about." So if you were to look at those two patients and said, which one do you think is going to die from COVID? It wouldn't be the fit 25-year-old. But yeah, that was the problem with COVID. Generally, patients you go to look sick and you know they're sick. With COVID, you didn't. COVID, they would look like you and I. They'd feel a bit rubbish. And then you do an oxygen saturation measurement and see that they've got oxygen levels of 60%, and you'd put them on the highest flow oxygen that we possibly could give, and it might only just bring them up to 80. And these are normally fit and well patients. So you had to think slightly differently. You had to do a thorough assessment to make sure that person wasn't hypoxic.
Yes, okay.
But I think with regards to COVID, I think we've got to remember it is still out there. It still has a real presence in our daily lives. I see patients for minor illness. I'd probably say the biggest presentation that I see is chest infections. With a chest infection, you have a cough. And we still have a policy in which you're meant to wear a mask if you have any respiratory symptoms. And I'd probably say the majority of patients still don't wear a mask. And I think the upshot of that is what we've seen recently with the increase in flu, chest infections, because we're essentially going back to what we did before COVID and sharing our germs, whereas we could easily just put a mask on and wash our hands. So I think we've got a bit complacent as a nation regards to COVID.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I know for myself, it's, you just think it's sort of a thing of the past now, and
yeah,
you're
totally
back to normal.
Yeah. Or you'll sit there with a raging chest infection in the waiting room, and there's every chance that the person next to you's got COVID. So you've now got this chest infection, but now you've caught COVID, and now you've just delayed your recovery even more. There were a lot of challenges, and as a result of the challenges, I think the NHS as a whole, and maybe even me as a clinician, think totally differently. And I think we've risen to those challenges, and I think we've found ways around them. And I think one of the notable ones is treating patients, but they don't all have to go to hospital. So treating people in their own homes and the benefits that can bring, not to just the patient and the family, but also to the wider NHS. I think the other thing that springs to mind is the difficult working environments that we were assessing patients in. So, for example, we started wearing just normal masks, gloves and aprons for COVID-positive patients. They weren't particularly comfortable, but they weren't particularly uncomfortable. But we then went on to wearing full surgical gowns and essentially respirators, which by all intents and purposes looked like gas masks. So then we were having to wear this equipment whilst doing a cardiac arrest. So we would be doing CPR in full PPE, and it could be 30 degrees outside. So just minor interventions that we take for granted, for example, putting in a cannula or putting in an airway, doing it with a gas mask on is a lot more difficult, it turns out. So I think for me, it's certainly taught me a certain resilience. It's certainly taught me a new way of working and a new way of thinking as well. You know, countless times I'll walk in and look at a patient, and that won't be the full story until I do a full assessment, because COVID has shown us that they might look well, but they're not necessarily well under the surface. So they're probably the biggest learnings that I've had.
Yes, okay. That's really interesting. Now I'd like to move on to sort of now and then, more sort of into the future. What new ideas, what new projects are you working on at the moment?
So basically, at the moment, we've just very recently set up a full service. So this is a full service that has come about from my own experiences. Some time ago, last year, I learned of a patient that had waited in excess of 10 hours for an ambulance to get them off the floor. And this got me thinking, this problem's not going to go away. The ambulance service is under a massive pressure. And truthfully, is an elderly faller on the floor the sole responsibility of the ambulance service? And I don't think it is. I think it's the responsibility of the wider healthcare system. So, as I mentioned in my introduction, I work as the paramedic ambassador. So we essentially have 40 plus paramedics working across Mid and South Essex. And they work in the community in the same position that I do. They do home visits, they do assessments at home, they do assessments in the surgery. And I started thinking, well, why aren't we using these clinicians to get people off the floor faster than waiting for an ambulance? So luckily for me, I work for a very progressive and very forward thinking integrated care system, and managed to speak to some of the directors who had already put falls at the top of their list by putting razor chairs in care homes. And I got to talking to this team, and we set about setting up the falls trial. So it's only been going for a week now. There's two PCNs involved, so it's my PCN and another PCN. We look after a population of approximately 90,000 patients. And the way it works is the conventional falls that come from the ambulance service or are produced by the ambulance service, someone phoning, they get those calls get transferred over to UCRT and they get assessed in the SPA, which the SPA is a single point access. So they get assessed a second time by a clinician up there. And if they're under our PCN and we're available, we'll be referred that elderly faller with the proviso that we'll be with them within 2 hours. So paramedics are very good at triaging calls. So for example, if I've got 5 home visits to do, I'll look through those 5 home visits and see who I think is the sickest and see them first. So essentially what we're doing with the elderly fallers is we're putting them to the top of the list if clinically appropriate, and we're getting to them faster. And when we arrive, we're looking to do a full top-to-toe survey assessment. And if safe to do so, we're looking to remove them from the floor and get them comfortable. Second to that, we're then doing a bigger assessment, whereas we now have to decide which way are we going to go. Are we going to go to the ED department or can we refer them on to another service? And from my experience, the majority of them are being left at home and being referred on to either UCRT, the frailty consultant team, the virtual ward, or even I will do a follow-up with them in a few days just to see how they're doing after speaking to their GP. So a lot of them don't need to go to the ED department, and a lot of them don't want to go to the ED department, and I think that's important. So we're very much in the infancy. The model that we've got in place, I think could quite easily be a national model. You know, there's primary care paramedics all around the UK. Falls is a problem all around the UK, and the ambulance service being under pressure is a problem all around the UK. So why would we not bring this in? So, you know, it's very much in its infancy, but equally, I think it's a bit of a no-brainer. The patients really appreciate it, and we're stopping onward referrals to the ED department, which I think we really need to do.
That's really interesting. And how is it different from what's been done before?
I think the biggest advantage of this model is continuity. So, for example, you might get a crew of an ambulance crew out to you. They get you off the floor. You don't need to go to hospital, and you stay at home. You might have another clinician or even someone from the council get you off the floor and get you comfortable and leave you at home, which are all great things. But I think coming back to continuity, which is something that I know patients really like, is they belong to our PCN. I talk to the team of clinicians that know them really, really well. And we also know what their norm is. I know what that elderly patient was probably like before their fall. So I do it on a daily basis. I'll walk into a patient that I've got to know over the last couple of years and realise that she might have deteriorated, or this is normal for her, nothing's changed. Whereas outside clinicians who wouldn't have that personal relationship wouldn't be able to spot those changes in the patient. So I think continuity and keeping it keeping it in-house and away from other services, which are, you know, obviously stretched beyond belief, I think are the perks that I can think of.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting. And what would you say you've learned? What sort of challenges have you had in setting this up?
There's been quite a few challenges. I think finding the time to set up a project like this has been the biggest challenge. You know, I work 3 days a week clinically. So when I'm at work in my clinical role from 8 o'clock in the morning to 6:30 at night, it's full on. There's not necessarily times to have a meeting or times to sit down and work things through. So I would say for me personally, a lot of this trial has been done in my own spare time on my days off. I think obviously there's the financial side of things, you know, the equipment that we need, you know, like anything, it comes at a price. And the NHS obviously being very careful about where they put their resources and how they use their money, which is understandable. But I think in relation to that, I think the fact that me going along, getting someone off the floor and keeping them at home, and I do that countless times throughout a year, I'd love to see how much that would save the NHS as a whole. And more importantly, it would keep patients out of hospital. You know, we're now getting rid of the risk of them contracting hospital-acquired infections. We're hopefully getting their confidence back faster because they're getting off the floor faster. So for me, the advantages outweigh the disadvantages. But, you know, something like this is quite difficult to set up. But I think when you've got the obvious advantages, it makes it a lot easier, and it certainly keeps the enthusiasm going.
Yes, okay, that's good. And where do you see the sort of the project going in the next, say, 2 or 3 years?
So I think, you know, we've spoken majority of the time about falls. I can see this project getting bigger in the fact of we still have a lot of our patients across the UK phoning the ambulance service for problems that could be dealt with in primary care. So I think picking up those calls from the ambulance service and getting there before the ambulance to see if they really do need the emergency services, I think is a natural progression. So for example, you know, I still work with the ambulance service every so often, and I'm still going out to people with urine infections or chest infections. Now, we might be too late in the fact that that patient has phoned 999 and got through to the system, but what we're seeing at the moment is we're sharing, or we're being allowed access to the held calls by the emergency services. So a clinician can go through those calls and identify a patient that's phoned up for maybe what might be perceived as a primary care problem, and then hopefully would be able to refer it to us. The other thing that I would like to see is the clinicians, as part of the fall, take part in a minor injuries course. So that could be a level 7 minor injuries course at a university with a placement at a minor injuries centre. And I think the reason this is so important is I can go out and get someone off the floor, I can assess them. If they've got a minor injury, what do we do? And I think it'd be great if that episode of care could be seen through by one clinician. So for example, if a patient has a skin tear on their leg, that we'd be able to sort that out for them, and we wouldn't have to send them into ED, to the minor injuries unit. So there are other things that we could do. In a perfect world, we would have point of care testing. So for example, we could do a blood test that gives us an instant result within 30 or 40 seconds. this would have a knock-on effect to the already busy hospital labs, you know, because we'd be processing our own bloods. So essentially, I'd like to see it as a very self-sufficient model where that episode of care can be seen all the way through to the end, providing that patient the continuity that they need.
That's good. Thank you. I'd like to round it off with a bigger, wider question sort of around NHS England and policy and how we work. If you were in charge of primary care networks at NHS England, what would be the top two or three things that you'd want to change or implement?
Okay, so that's a pretty big question. I think I would want to invest more money into hospital at home projects. So these would be projects that you've got a real MDT approach. You've got physician associates, you've got physiotherapists, you've got occupational therapists, you've got GPs, you've got ED consultants, all working together, all debriefing that patient's journey, and more importantly, dealing with it with the patient at home. So more assessments at home with greater investment in the technology that is out there. So for example, you can do on-site ultrasounds now, point of care testing for the bloods that I mentioned. There really are solutions out there to keep people at home. And I think slowly but surely we're getting away from the thought process of that person's sick, they need to go to hospital. And I think, you know, patients have thought like that for years, and so have clinicians. And I think if we can really put some investment into treating patients at home, I think that would be a win-win situation for everyone. And I would like to see the paramedic profession as part of that, whether or not they're working alongside a ED consultant who's visiting patients at home, or a frailty consultant who's doing a holistic assessment at home. Another idea is whenever we go to a patient on the floor, sometimes they might be on the floor for an unknown reason. So if I turned up an ambulance, I would do a 12-lead ECG to make sure that their heart was working correctly. So going forward, it would be great to get some monitoring for the primary care clinicians. And this would enable us to do a cardiovascular assessment on that patient that's collapsed. But equally, what would be really, really good is if we had a monitor that's also a defibrillator. And the great thing about this is you would then have multiple paramedics in the community with a defib in the back of their car. And they would be able to respond to cardiac arrests, out-of-hospital cardiac arrests via the Good Sam app. So the Good Sam app is basically an app that you download to a smartphone. And if you're taught or you're qualified in basic life support, and you've been certified by the Good Sam community, they will send you a notification to a cardiac arrest that you're near to. So the idea behind this is the 999 call service receives a call for help for the ambulance service. They triage it as a cardiac arrest. Whilst they're dispatching their own clinicians, they will send the message out to the Good Sam app, and generally it will send you a notification that there's a cardiac arrest within 800 metres of your location, or even up to a mile. And I think this would especially help in the fact that the current climate, you know, we could be waiting longer than we want for a first responder from the ambulance service to arrive. So this would basically put a paramedic, a community paramedic, by that patient's side with a defibrillator, and hopefully increase their chain of survival by delivering a shock and delivering basic life support. So I think that bit of kit, although very, very expensive, It would be used for all home visits, not just the elderly fallers. It would be used for ensuring that the elderly patient is safe to stay at home if they have had a fall. But equally, it could potentially be used for life-threatening emergencies and saving lives in the community. I think we've got the expertise out there, we've got the enthusiasm out there, and we've now got the technology out there to help. So that would be my greatest aspirations, to see the hospital coming to the patient's house and treating them at home more, and leaving A&E for the sick people, and leaving the ambulance services just dealing with genuine emergencies. So that would be my aspiration.
Yes, okay. That's excellent. Thanks very much, Jamie. It's been a really good session.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Well, I trust you found that interesting and insightful. I certainly learned a lot. I think firstly, I learned about the way PCNs combine different professions to give patients a single point of access and speed up care. And secondly, I think this conversation reinforced once more the value and importance of treating patients at home as much as possible and keeping them out of hospital. So, that's episode 3 of Innovators in Care. Thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you next time for episode 4. Thank you and goodbye.